Good morning. You are tuned to KBBI Homer, AM 890. The time is 9:01 a.m., and this is the regular Thursday COVID brief. On the line, let's see who's on the line. Peggy Erkineff from Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Thanks so much for being here. And Dorotha Ferraro, South Peninsula Hospital.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Dorotha. Also, I do expect Paul Story to call in a little while, but I want to get right to Peggy Erkineff. If you have your questions, be ready. Chloe is standing by to take your calls at 235-7721, or you can email questions to kathleen@kbbi.org. So I want to start with what everybody seems to be talking about around here is about the Homer High School football team's quarantine. And I know there was a very informative Zoom meeting last night, but Peggy Erkineff, can you bring us up to speed in terms of what the information the district is putting out there?
Absolutely. And I first want to give just a really wonderful shout out and thank you to the team at Homer High School. We did learn that there was a positive case associated with the football program, and it was late in the afternoon, and our nurse there, our principal, our athletic director, everybody came together. They called the district office, and our nursing supervisor became involved with contact tracing. And so we have all these mitigation plans and all this stuff everybody's been hearing about put in place, but it works. And again, we had a time when we're all learning as we go how this works. We've never done this before, but we've put the plans in place, and operationally we were able to respond and get in touch with everybody fairly rapidly. And contact tracing takes a while. So what happens is when there is a positive case, we have to go back in time, and Dorotha can explain this a little bit more, but we have to look back in time at where that person was. So that all happened, and as a result of the contact tracing, the whole football program is in a 14-day quarantine, and that ends, their last day of quarantine is on October 17th. So they're free to go out and about on the 18th, and that is if they haven't developed any symptoms or gotten sick. So those coaches are working with the students and meeting with them every day, and they're in 100% remote learning. We're working to reschedule a big football game, which they will be able to practice on that Sunday, and lots of moving parts and lots of care and kindness and questions. So I'm here to answer them, and I know Dorotha can help out with that too.
Dorotha, do you want to add something to that in terms of contact tracing?
Well, I think I will stand by in case Lorne calls in, because he is the master contact tracer for the Southern Peninsula.
I know that's true.
Teams of that.
I know that's true, yeah. But Lorne's not going to be able to be with us this morning. We'll catch him next time. Peggy Erkineff.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Okay. Peggy Erkineff, can
just the thing that I was
going
to speak about was the importance of still tracing in our minds every day what our activities are, so that when a moment like this happens, the process is seamless. It's fast and seamless. As we have all expanded our bubbles, it makes the job of contact tracing very difficult. It's hard to even remember, especially for a teenager, everything they've done in the course of a day. So it's not a bad idea, folks, to continue to just jot down at the end of the day what you did today, so that if you were to get called, it would be an easier process.
And can I add to that?
Go ahead, please.
This is something I've learned from I'm usually involved with anything that's been happening in one of our schools, and we've had things in Seward, and we've had it in Central Peninsula. Around the question I get a lot is, so I'm a close contact, but what about people that are close to me? So this question came up last night, and it did come up with a lot of the phone conversations home to families. So everybody in the football program is considered a close contact of somebody who was positive, but their family members aren't. So I want to give a scenario that if a student is, so a child in a family is now in a 14-day quarantine, their brothers or sisters or parents are a contact of a close contact. So they can go about their everyday life, right? and go to school. But if they become with any symptoms or anything, then they need to get tested, and they could potentially have move away out of, and DeRosa has better language than this, but no longer be, they might want to be in isolation or consider maybe they're getting sick. But in a family, you might have somebody who's in quarantine, but the other family members are not.
Thank you.
And to follow up on that too, one of the common questions is, oh, there's somebody in my family who's in quarantine. I better go get tested. And no, there's no testing for what is called the worried well. The testing needs to be limited to like those with exposure to a known confirmed case, which is different than somebody who's worried well third degree out.
So a difference between knowing someone who's in quarantine and knowing you've been exposed to someone who's tested positive. Is that the difference?
There you go. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That was a good way to put it.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm on top of that. Peggy Erkineff, can you talk about how this transmission happened? Was it through Soldotna, through a football football game?
I can answer that question partially.
Okay.
What I can tell you is there was, through contact tracing, there is no close contact with the Soldotna football team. So there's nothing with Soldotna High School that is affected by the Homer High School football program quarantine. And we're really guarding because of FERPA, which is laws regarding student information, and HIPAA, which is laws regarding medical information. The school district's being just really sensitive that we aren't revealing, unless public health directs us to, anything about the person or people that are involved with a positive case. And so what I can just share is, based on contact tracing over a period of a couple days, that it affected the entire football program considered a close contact and in a 14-day quarantine.
I'm more interested in point of transmission than you know, shining a light on any individual person, but I think that it did answer my question. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and I think, you know, remember, and DeRosa can describe this, so that we've heard all this so often, but it's a good time for a refresher. So we have to pay attention to time and distance from everybody and wearing masks. So DeRosa, can you remind everybody what a close contact would be, like the distance and duration and that, so that people have that again fresh in their mind?
Well, generally the amount of exposure time is 15 minutes, and that is cumulative. That is not necessarily just in one setting. So you might be with somebody pretty close without a mask for 5 minutes, and then later that day, again for 5 or 10 minutes, and now you've reached the 15-minute threshold. So it is, you know, a cumulative, and it's also close distance if you both aren't masked. And it's different if you are both masked, but if you both are not masked, then you're definitely considered close contact. That's one of the messages from the state right now that's so important, is that we continue to keep our distances from each other, especially now that we are spending more time indoors because of the weather changing and more activities being open and services being open. We're inside more, and just, you know, don't let our guards down. It's great to do it. It's great that we're open and things are working and running, but just as long as we can respect the need to keep our distance while that's happening, and stay masked, and limit your close contact. If you can't be masked and far apart, that 6-foot distance, then please limit the amount of time you're with them. The greater the viral load that you're exposed to, the higher the chances are of you getting getting ill and getting very ill with it. So just minimizing those interactions.
I want to inject a listener question who just called the station at 235-7721 and left their question with Chloe. The listener asks, DeRosa, this is definitely for you. Why doesn't South Peninsula Hospital offer rapid tests for KPBSD students? And why do we have to drive to Nanilchik to get those rapid tests? Can you address that?
Well, I guess it's a combination of things. We're serving a very large group of service area residents, and there's high demand on that rapid test. As a parent, you might feel that it's priority for a student to have rapid tests so that my student can get back to school. Well, the good news is that the school has set up this phenomenal system so that simply being out of school for 2 or 3 days waiting on your test result does not negatively set you back in the classroom because you can attend school from home. Whereas there might be a situation where you might be a Coast Guard employee and your ship is setting sail tomorrow and you need to get a rapid test or you don't get to get on that ship, which is an essential service and public safety for the general community, state, and nation. So we just have to use the state mandate, which the state mandate says that for the rapid tests, which that equipment was given to us by the state, that we are to define essential services and public safety. It's essential services and public safety. And then other than that, we are to send them to the state lab. So we do as many as 100 and like yesterday, I think we were at 110 swabs a day, and we just don't have the manpower or the equipment. All of a sudden, those rapid tests, if we were running them as rapid tests, they would be two or three days out because okay. We don't have the manpower to run hundreds that way.
Okay, Peggy Erkineff, is there any plan for the school district to acquire rapid tests for the students?
Not at this time, and I know we work very closely with all of our local medical providers, but I don't have any information at this time.
Thanks.
That we are possibly into the future.
Okay. Paul Story is on the line, I believe. Paul, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Paul is a counselor at Homer High School. Correct me if I get this wrong. Is it for the whole district or is it at Homer High?
No, this is the first year I've exclusively been at the Homer High School.
Oh, good. Thank you for clearing that up for me. But we were just discussing how people we can't be in proximity in the way we used to. And I know you and I have had a conversation about how this has affected high school sports fundraising. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, pretty much all the traditional fundraisers that sports teams and the activities at Homer High School. We have 14 organized athletic teams plus the drama, debate, and forensics team, so 15 in all. And pretty much anything you can imagine that they would traditionally do, whether it's selling food, having a car wash, and in recent years the most popular means to raise revenue is raffles. So students being in the community, student athletes typically being in the community, at Safeway, asking friends and neighbors to support a cash raffle is the most typical one, and the school district has said that's just not safe and proper in this environment. So, we're trying to supplement or actually substitute that revenue booster club-wide. So the Homer High Mariner Booster Club is an organization that supports all 15 of those activities. And we are having an online raffle now to try to help that, and we'll distribute the revenue amongst all those 15 teams. So this is a new thing for us, and luckily Homer Council on the Arts has successfully done one and gave us some guidance. I think Alaskan Coastal Studies might be doing something similar too, but it's through an organization called Rally Up that does these online raffles. It's completely on the up and up with Rally Up, and it's through our Alaska Gaming license through the Booster Club. And you go to their website, which is go.rallyup.com/mariners. I'll repeat that for the listening audience. It's go.rallyup.com/mariners, or you can text Mariners to 855 202 2100. Again, text Mariners to 855-202-2100, and you'll get all the information to enter the raffle. It's a split the pot raffle, so we are hoping to generate $10,000, so the winner would get $5,000. That's our goal. Right now, we just started it. We have $952 in the kitty, so we're hoping for some more community support because, you know, typically I think most every team has a raffle, and I think those would typically generate between $2,000 and $3,000 per team, even after the payout of the prizes. So substitute for that is a pretty large order, and so we're hoping people can rally and go to that rallyup.com site and support Mariner activities.
Also, Paul, can you surely there is some social media platform where people can go and get a link to it and to keep up with information about Homer High School sports, or is there?
Yeah, the Homer High School Facebook page, we're posting that same information weekly. We have a flyer out in various places that folks can see more information and some nice pictures of the fall sports. That's also available, the Homer High Facebook page and the Homer High Mariner Booster Club Facebook page both have posts. And I believe, I don't think it's up yet, but on our regular Homer High School website, I asked Principal Wislowski to put that up. I'm not sure that's happened. I'm also not sure because it's gaming if he is allowed to do that, but
okay.
It's out there.
Well, I appreciate you calling in because I know that it's this is true in pretty much everybody's workspace. The old way of doing things is no longer the way we do things. So I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. I mean, I will just tell you that things are going pretty well here. It's a really heavy lift for the teachers in particular who are juggling the remote students and the in-person students, but the students are following the guidelines because they really want to be in school and stay in school. And as far as the activities are concerned, it's an important part of their physical and emotional health. It gives them something to do, and it feels a little bit normal if we can keep these activities going, even if they have to be modified. It's better than nothing for sure, and we need support to continue to make that happen. So thanks to everybody for contributing.
And thank you, Paul Story, counselor at Homer High School.
Okay, good morning. Bye.
Good morning to you. Now, I do have a question that came in to 235-7721. I think this one's more for DeRotha. A listener asks, if he tests positive, can he personally go on the internet and radio and let people know he's contracted COVID-19 so they can know they've been in contact? He's curious about patient privacy pertaining to the pandemic. And my understanding is that an individual can reveal their own status. Isn't that correct, DeRotha?
Absolutely. And boy, wouldn't that be a really simple way to do contact tracing?
Through the bush lines.
you know, exactly. If you are positive, and that is the fastest way to make sure that everybody that is at risk for also having it then immediately knows. However, it's only with the public health diagnosis that, for example, the hospital would do the testing then to the second party. So it does have to be that you have a confirmed pop from public health, and that you are being, you know, your case is being investigated, et cetera, that we would start testing the people that, you know, you exposed. You also need to wait some time before you get tested. If I get exposed to a known positive, if my husband gets a positive test back, and, actually that's a bad example because I had, you know, lived with him the day before, but if I have a known close exposure to a positive, known positive, I don't go and get tested the moment that I learned that. I have to wait. The average wait time, you know, is really 5 to 7 days from point of exposure until you should go get tested. Because if you go and get tested that day, you might test negative because the viral load in you is not detectable in the systems that we have. And so you have to wait until it's been, you know, replicating in your body to the point where it's detectable by the test. So they say 5 to 7 days is, even seven is really the best time. That's why when you look at the state of Alaska travel mandate, when people are flying in, they test at the airport, but then they're to test 7 days later because that's the amount of time that it would take to become detectable if they were exposed en route.
Thank you. The other thing to, I just want to remind the caller that this is something I tell everyone who interacts with media when he's talking about going on the internet or going on the radio, that information is yours to share, but once you share it, it belongs to everyone else. So think carefully. I actually believe that being open about it and letting people know is a great thing, but also you have to keep it in your mind that information no longer really belongs to you once you give it out that way.
Also, the advantage of allowing public health to do the alerting and informing is that with that alert will come knowledge and fact-based and evidence-based information, and they'll be able to answer questions and give clinical advisement and also talk to those individuals about their other health conditions. We're all unique and we all have unique situations, unique, you know, physical and emotional health and living environments, et cetera. So it's really, it's a better platform to learn it from a clinician so that they can walk you through what you need to do as well as answer any questions that you might have.
Right. The one thing you don't want to do is circumvent public health and try and do it yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Peggy Erkineff from Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. We're reaching the end of our half hour. I want to make sure that is there any other information that you feel like needs to get out? Is there another Zoom meeting planned? Anything that would or that's coming up so that you know, just to keep people informed about what's happening next?
Yeah, a couple things I would love to add. The Zoom meeting last night was excellent. And thank you, DeRosa, for being on that with Principal Wachowski and our Homer High School nurse, and I was on it as well, and parents. There was excellent questions asked, and everybody comes to those with what their concerns are and their lens. So I actually think it would be helpful to do more throughout the peninsula and at schools. And if we end up having positive cases, you know, we've got a large number of people in a 14-day quarantine. And so I want to prepare Homer that we could end up with positive cases out of that group of people. And so we need to be there for each other, answer questions. So I anticipate we might do another Zoom. And I talked to Principal Wachowski last night about that, and he's in favor of that if the community needs it. So that's one thing. Another thing is we did ask when we do contact tracing in a school where, for example, a student or a staff person has had contact with a lot of people, and so if they became a close contact, if they were identified as a close contact, and then within 48 hours of them being in a school, they did get symptoms or got sick, that's a lot of people that we have to backtrack with to potentially determine who they are. Just like DeRosa said, when we go back in time, where have you been for the last 48 hours? So we were asking people to potentially get a test, and because we know if they're negative on that date, then we don't have to go back and do the contact tracing at school. But the one thing that we have to remember is that test is a moment in time, and so if somebody has a negative test, it does not mean that in future days they aren't going to become ill. And so we can't drop our guard or think that we're okay just because we have a negative test during a 14-day quarantine. So those are the main things that I want to share, and I just want to thank everybody in the Homer community, and the district is here to help, and I know public health is, and we've got counselors, and we're all here for each other to get through this, and we need to really be wearing the masks and watching our time and distance with each other.
Thank you, Peggy Erkineff. I did have another question come in that that I want to direct to both of you. I think, first of all, is the family of the person who tested positive also quarantining? Or is this?
Well, that if they were within the close 15-minute duration in a 24-hour period without masks, then they would be considered a close contact of a positive case.
Okay.
And public health would ask them to quarantine.
And yeah. Then here's one I think for DeRotha. Has the Homer positive case appeared? Is it on the South Peninsula Hospital case count? Has it appeared on the state COVID site yet? The listener says they haven't seen it over the past couple of days.
That's a great question. I have that question myself, and we were discussing it here as a team this morning at the hospital. There have been moments over the life of the pandemic where we might see a positive or two or three through the hospital testing station that then does not seem to align to the state of Alaska data that's released. There's a variety of reasons for that I can figure out. One is that upon contact tracing, what might appear to be a Southern Peninsula resident, upon contact tracing might turn into not being a Southern Peninsula resident. Because if a person happens to be here working for 6 weeks, they're not a Homer resident. Their residency is wherever their normal residence is. So contact tracing reveals a lot, and case investigation, as well as contact tracing reveals a lot, number one. Number two, I'm just not certain from day to day, the results from the state lab getting onto that website. I know we are contacted in real time from the state of Alaska when results are reported out. They contact us immediately so that then we can contact the person. The orders go in through from the hospital. They go in through our ER director as the standing order from that physician. So that's why they contact us and then our ER coordinator then, or our infection prevention physician contacts the person. How fast that information though gets from that lab onto the state website, I think the goal is each day by midnight, but I cannot honestly speak for the state and how fast that gets updated.
Okay, thanks. Now, I know that we, South Peninsula Hospital had a nice long streak of not being identifying any positive cases of COVID, but that streak has been broken. There are now, I think, three new ones in the last couple of days that I've seen on your daily reports. Can you talk a little bit about positive tests found in Homer through South Peninsula Hospital?
We've had six positives report out since last Friday. But remember, like I said, that is a report out. It doesn't necessarily mean that person tested since last Friday, because the state can be behind by 3 to 4 days, depending on the situation, as far as even running the results. So anyway, since last Friday, we've had six new positives reported out. Again, do they all live on the Southern Peninsula? I don't know that. I don't know where the individuals live, and we still are seeing plenty of visitors. I mean, travel still remains busy enough that the state has announced that they are keeping their free testing at the airport, free for residents, free testing at the airport through the end of the year. So travel and travel-related testing still remains quite busy.
Well, thank you, DeRotha. I know I have a list of things because we're over time now, but I want to have you remind people about flu shot clinics.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen. So flu shots are slowly making their way into the local clinics. There is a great snapshot of that in the Homer News today. But in addition to just normal clinic activity, and I do know clinics are also kind of planning special things so that you can maybe get them out in the parking lot as opposed to going in and that kind of thing. There are some specific events coming up. And the 16th and 17th, that's Friday the 16th from 2 to 6, Saturday the 17th from 10 to 1, there will be drive-through flu shots in the parking lot at South Peninsula Family Care Clinic on Bartlett Street. and you do not have to be a patient of that clinic. It is co-sponsored by them and Homer Medical, but it's open to the public. If the drive-through part is for basically teens and adults, and for little ones, they will be asked to actually park and come in the clinic. We're reserving some exam rooms there to do inside flu shots for the little ones on that day. So it's the 16th and 17th. And then SVT Health and Wellness will be doing a community drive-through flu shot clinic on Tuesday, October 27. And that is SVT's kind of like event for the Rotary Health Fair. And so that will be open from 4 to 7 on October 27, from 4 to 7. And that will be at the Methodist Church on East End Road there, very close to the high school. So we have three opportunities coming up soon in October. And then you can also call your provider to make an appointment. You can go to the pharmacies, both three pharmacies in town do it. So many more opportunities now to get your flu shots, which are super important because co-infection of flu and COVID significantly increases mortality rate. So it's not fun to have the flu and it's not fun to have COVID, but it's definitely not a good mix to have them both at the same time.
Thank you, Dorotha Ferraro from South Peninsula Hospital and Peggy Erkineff from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I so appreciate your time. I don't want to keep you any longer. I do have a few things I'm going to read for people about the reminders about the household economic grants and such. But Peggy Erkineff, we'll stay in touch with you. And is there anything else that you want to add?
Just thank you for helping get information out. And we are here to respond with any help that we can give from the district.
Thanks, Peggy. We'll be in touch.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Dorotha, any last words?
Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Have a safe weekend.
Thank you very much. Dorotha Ferraro from South Peninsula Hospital, Peggy Erkineff for Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and Paul Story from the Homer High School Counselor's Office. Thanks to all the listeners who send in their questions. And here's just a reminder that the City of Homer Household Economic Relief Grant Program is still going on. The deadline to apply is Friday, October 16th. That is not this Friday, but next Friday. And on the City of Homer website, we have links on our COVID reports. I'll make sure to put up another link so that you can access it. But you can just go to the City of Homer website and find it. There is $1.5 million to be allocated. On our Tuesday morning update, Jenny Carroll from the City of Homer let us know that less than $100,000 of that money had been allocated as of Tuesday. So there is still more money if you qualify, and funding of up to $1,500 grants per household are available. And this has been the COVID-19 Thursday Morning Brief. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. The time is 9:34. Thanks for listening, Catch a Mac Bay.